I remembered I forgot one. It's on the floor at home, resting comfortably. Today we continue our study into the book of Revelation. We do this on the first Sabbath of every month, and the congregation requested we go through the book of Revelation. So we are going through it, and we're more than halfway now. Last month we began what Mr. Armstrong used to call inset chapters of 12, 13, and 14. Before continuing with the Revelation, God gave John several visions or signs, people call them by different names, to explain who these characters are, and who, because they will be involved in the rest of the Revelation. Many writers will stop and go back in time to provide details that are needed to bring the reader up to date with the related events. God knows these visions or signs describe various entities that we need to understand before going forward in the Revelation. One commentary referred to these three chapters as seven significant signs. Now, people divide them in different ways, but this one chapter, this one commentary said the first was a woman clothed with the sun, Revelation 12, 1-6, and then the enormous red dragon, which was right after that, and then the war between the dragon and the woman, which is Revelation 12, 7-17. We covered that last time. Then there's the beast from the sea, Revelation 13, 1-10, which I plan to begin to explain today. There's a lot to this one. And then the beast from the earth, which is Revelation 13, 11-18. And then the lamb on Mount Zion, which is Revelation 14, 1-5. And then the harvest of the earth, Revelation 14, 6-20. Now, as I say, people divide these different ways, but this will work for our purposes today. These signs or visions represent the main characters in the final conflict between the two systems mentioned in the book of Revelation, the virtuous woman and the great harlot, the holy Jerusalem and the unholy Babylon, the reign of Jesus Christ and the reign of Satan. The people of God endure assault from the political, economic, and religious system that is controlled by Satan. And we'll see that as we go on. And we've seen it to some extent, but we're going to get into it more now in the rest of the book. Let's go to Revelation 13, and I'll just read through the first nine verses of this chapter. The section actually includes verse 10, but we'll make that a separate thing, and we will deal with that on the next study. Chapter 13, verse 1. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on his heads, plural, a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshipped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemy, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. And all who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. Before continuing the Revelation, God introduces John and us to a beast. It's called a beast. Who is this beast? Remember, God gave this revelation for a great purpose. Let's go back to Revelation 1, 1 and 2. Revelation chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, where we learn the purpose here of the vision. The revelation, Revelation 1, verses 1 and 2, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants. God gave it to Jesus to show Jesus' servants things which must shortly take place. And he sent and signified it by his angel to his servant, Christ's servant, John, who bore witness of the word of God and to the testimony of Jesus Christ and to all things that he saw. And he goes on to pronounce a blessing on those who read and follow the things that are in here. All right, who is this beast? The vision was intended to give us understanding for our time and in our time. John was carried forward to the day of the Lord, as it says in Revelation chapter 1 and verse 10. He was carried forward to the day of the Lord, as we explained in detail when we went through it, when God steps in to intervene in the affairs of mankind, which we've already seen announced by seven trumpets and seven last plagues, which we'll get to. We've covered the seven trumpets, or we're covering the seven trumpets. Now we will, and we'll cover the seven last plagues as we get to them. Later in this very chapter, chapter 13, we will read about the mark of the beast. We'll also read about the image of the beast, the mark of the beast and the image of the beast. But we won't know what the mark of the beast is or the image of the beast unless we know who the beast is. You have to know that before you can fit in the rest of it, and the rest of it will understand. If we don't understand who the beast is, we won't understand what is its mark and what its image is. When people read this section, they often come up with various ideas about who the beast is. I don't know what your family, but when I was a kid, my family used to read Revelation. I've mentioned this in the past, and I usually add that contrary to the laws of science, their disagreement usually produced all heat and no light, because they would all get all stirred up about it, and they'd get all, you know, about what it means and who the beast is and all this kind of thing, because it fascinates people to know who this is or to figure it all out. And I've heard many numerous fanciful ideas. People have all kinds of ideas. And the commentaries go all over on who this beast is. They have all kinds of ideas, and they got it all jumbled up. I heard one of the most astonishing I ever heard was that the beast is the United States. Now, I didn't hear that directly. I only heard that secondhand, so I don't know if anybody really thinks that. But I thought that's really amazing that anybody would come to that to that conclusion. If somebody really thinks that, as I hope to demonstrate to you before the sermon's over, they really don't understand Bible prophecy, because the explanation is given to us. Some think the beast is a man. Can you imagine walking down the street and seeing a guy with seven heads and ten horns? It's him! Look, it's him! Be very easy to recognize such a person. Or what man would be like a leopard and like a bear, have feet like a bear and a mouth that's like a lion. What kind of guy would that be? Wouldn't be your average Charlie, would it? I mean, you know, it'd be somebody quite unusual. Others think it represents the leader of a church. What church would have seven heads and ten horns coming out of it? Can you imagine a church like that? How would that be? Or what church is like a leopard with the feet of a bear and the mouth of a lion? What kind of a church would that be? Obviously, brethren, these are symbols. These are all symbols of something else. And even the term beast is a symbol. If we identify the symbols, we'll identify the beast, because these symbols tell us who the beast is. But how do we unlock the meaning of the symbols? How do we unlock them? This leads to a very important principle of understanding Bible prophecy. And it's a principle which so many overlook. It is overlooked time and time again. Ignore this principle and you'll end up completely off course and into gross error. And it'll just take you all the way off the beam, and where many people are. The principle is this: the Bible interprets its own symbols. We don't fancifully pick what they mean. The Bible explains what the symbols mean itself, and it explains it. We don't want man's interpretation of these symbols. We want God's explanation of these symbols. And when we have God's explanation of them, then we know we've got sound teaching. And then we know that we're going to go right. To keep a marker there in Revelation 13, let's go back to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7, and let's begin in verse 1. We're going to spend some time in Daniel, but we're covering Revelation. Just want to keep that in mind. You'll think we're covering Daniel in a minute here, but anyway, we're covering Revelation. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions on his head while on his bed. You know, remember, originally, Nebuchadnezzar had the dream, and he called on Daniel to interpret it. Now, this dream is given to Daniel directly. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring upon the great sea. So here they are coming from the sea. Here's something to see. And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. Now, they came up from the sea. That's exactly what it says in Revelation chapter 13 and verse 1, where John says, Then I stood in the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast. This is just one. I saw a beast rising out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Okay, so Daniel said, I saw four beasts come up out of the sea, each different from the other. So we have a difference. Daniel sees four. John saw one. If you look at Revelation chapter 17, we're going to peek ahead of where we are, because there's an explanation of the sea. Revelation 17 and verse 15. I'll just pick out the one verse. We'll explain in detail when we get to that point, but just pick out the one verse that explains it. He said, Revelation 17 and verse 15, Then he said to me, The waters which you saw, where the harlot sits, we haven't identified the harlot yet, we'll get to it, are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. So the waters there have to do with peoples, nations, multiple nations and peoples that are there. And that seems to be the meaning of the sea that's talked about here in Revelation, in Daniel chapter 7. Verse 3 again, and four great beasts come up from the sea, each different from the other. Verse 4 of Daniel 7, the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. And I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. So it was like a lion. We already have the lion here, and we know this. We covered Daniel chapter 2. I plan to read a bit from that later today. This is speaking about Nebuchadnezzar and the kingdom of Babylon. The first was like a lion and had an eagle's wings, and I watched till its wings were plucked off. And I was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And a man's heart was given to it. Now the lion, of course, is the called the king of the beast, noble and stately, very strong, not one you want to mess with. We've seen lions when we lived in South Africa, got to see a number of lions. They are very impressive animals. And sometimes they look very relaxed, but all of a sudden you just know that this animal can all of a sudden come alive, and it's very strong, very ferocious, and its mouth is the strongest part. Verse 5, and suddenly another beast, a second like a bear, and that's the second one that's mentioned in Revelation. Second was another beast like a bear. It was raised up on one side and had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and they said to it, arise and devour much flesh. We won't go into the detail of that, but it was like a bear. A bear is extremely powerful legs and arms, but slow. It's more defense than offense. And yet it's ferocious. When you see bears take on things, it's amazing the strength they have. They can tear things apart just with a sweep of the arm. It's very, very powerful. Verse 6, after this I looked, and there was another, like a leopard. Now, here's the third animal that was described there. Like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. And the beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. Now, a leopard is fast, very fast, and also aggressive. They're aggressive. They move very fast, and they're very aggressive. And notice it had four heads. That's significant. That's significant. We know that to be Alexander. And when he died, his kingdom, he died at a very young age, 33, I think it was. And his kingdom was divided into four sections, which lasted for many years and then regrouped in different ways. But they had four heads. That's significant. After this, verse 7, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. Now, these other ones were pretty impressive. But this fourth one was even stronger and more fearsome. After this, I saw in the night visions, behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. We saw a recent documentary on machines that can take cars and just turn them into nothing very quick. They have huge iron teeth. And they just roll them in there and the thing just shreds it to pieces. Huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts which were before it, and it had 10 horns. Now here's the one, and it also has 10 horns, like the one back in Revelation. All of them don't have 10 horns. Only the last one had 10 horns. That's significant. So that's important for us to keep in mind. Then the prophecy breaks to another subject. We'll pick that up later when we get to it in Revelation. Look down to verse 15 of Daniel 7. Verse 15. Daniel 7, verse 15. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. These were not pleasant things. He was upset by what he saw because of the fearsomeness and the terribleness of these creatures. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked him the truth of all this. Now notice that. Daniel wanted to know something. He asked, and he got his answer. You know, he says, ask and you'll receive. Daniel asked. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me, and made known to me the interpretation. Now that's what we want. We want the interpretation. So he told me, it made me to know the interpretation of these things. Those great beasts which are four kings which arise out of the earth. Now he's telling us the interpretation. They are four kings which arise out of the earth. My margin has a little note on it. I don't know if yours does, but mine does. And it points over to verse 23, and it says they also point to kingdoms. Verse 23, then he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom. In the Bible prophecy, the word king and kingdom are used interchangeably. It will talk about a king, it will talk about a kingdom. And they're interchangeably. It's talking about a governmental system. So the four beasts are four kings which arise out of the earth, or four kingdoms. These are the same four kingdoms that God revealed to Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel 2, verses 36 to 45. I covered that in detail on September 17, 2005. But let's go back there. We'll break from Daniel 7, which is a break from Revelation 13. And we'll go back to Daniel chapter 2, just to pick it all up and keep our understanding here. Daniel 2. Verse 36. You remember that Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, but because he'd lost confidence in his wise guys, or wise men, he wanted them to not only tell him the dream, but to tell him the interpretation, but to tell him the dream. He'd lost trust. He thought, if they can tell me the dream, then I'll believe their interpretation. If they can't tell me the dream, how can I know the interpretation's right? They got Daniel. Daniel explained to him the dream because God gave it to Daniel. Now, after he finishes explaining the dream, verse 36, Daniel 2, this is the dream. Now we will tell the interpretation of it before the king. You, O King, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. Nebuchadnezzar could not have reigned without God's permission. God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand and has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold. That was that first Babylonian empire. But after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to yours. And then another, a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron. This fourth kingdom is always linked with iron. Inasmuch as the iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything, and like the iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others. Whereas you saw the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mix with ceramic clay. In those European countries, they're each individual groupings. And there's a certain common Europeanness, but there's also a distinct individualness about every single group. And so they work together, but they remain separate. It's a very interesting dynamic there. That's the way it is in many parts of the world. In Africa, you have many tribes, but they still have their tribal identity. And in various parts of China or Italy, you'll find various groups of people that still have individual characteristics that we Americans often overlook or are unaware of. There are very many distinctions. Our country is unique in that regard. We have neighborhoods, but it's nowhere near the same. These are ethnic groups that are part of major groups that we tend to think of one group, but actually are distinct within them. And that's what Europe is. He said in verse 42, and as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. As you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay, this is the final kingdom, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of these kings, he's describing a group of kings, we'll get in detail about what they are, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. The previous four kingdoms were turned over to other nations, other groupings. This kingdom, when it's set up, the fifth one, the one God will set up, will never be turned over to anybody else. The God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Verse 45, inasmuch as you saw the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, this is implying Christ, the stone the builders rejected, and he's cut out without hands, no human participated in this. This is God's doing. The stone was cut out of the mount without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, the gold, the whole system all the way back to Nebuchadnezzar. The great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and the interpretation is sure. And you can believe Nebuchadnezzar, by standing there, was astonished that he'd explained it to them. Of course, Nebuchadnezzar came out the head of gold. That's good. I'm the head of gold. He can walk around. And it went downhill from there. Until God sets up a kingdom. But God told Nebuchadnezzar, you think about that. Here God revealed to Nebuchadnezzar that he was going to set up a kingdom that would eventually take over everything. Nebuchadnezzar had just taken over the children of Israel and conquered them because they had turned from the covenant. And Daniel was now a servant in his court, a slave virtually. And yet, here's the revealing that God's going to overturn it and going to turn it back again. There are a lot of irony and things along this line. It's really an amazing thing that's there. All right, let's go back to Daniel chapter 7 and at where we were here. Daniel chapter 7 and verse 19. Well, I didn't finish verse 15. Let me finish verse 15 to 18. Daniel 7, 15. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made me to know the interpretation of these things. These great beasts, which are four kings or kingdoms, which will arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever. That ties in with Daniel 2, that this last kingdom is replaced and the saints become receive the kingdom. Verse 19, Daniel was still troubled. Then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, that fourth beast, which couldn't be likened to an animal. It was so distinct. Then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its nails of bronze, which devoured broken pieces and trampled the residue with its feet. Now, these are all different characteristics. Tramping with the feet is not what a lion does, and they're different things. But the bear does that. And there are various characteristics here which overlap. And its nails of bronze, which devoured broken pieces and trampled the residue with its feet. And the 10 horns that were on its head. And the other horn which came up before the three fell. Namely, that horn that had eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows. We'll explain that when we come to it in Revelation. Verse 21. He talks about them making war with the saints. And then in verse 23 is the explanation of the fourth beast. And that's what we want to focus on. Then he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on the earth. Now, just about every Bible commentary recognizes these four kingdoms that came up. That first of all was the Babylonian, and then the Medo-Persian, and then the Greco-Macedonian, and lastly the Roman one. And you will find just about every Bible commentary identifies this as the Roman Empire. A fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms. It shall devour the whole earth, trample and break it in pieces. The 10 horns are 10 kings which arise from this kingdom. Please notice that. They arise from this kingdom. And another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the first ones, and he shall subdue three kings. We'll explain that when we get to that. So we see the kingdoms, first of all, have to do our four kingdoms. And then the fourth beast is the Roman Empire, and the 10 horns are 10 kings, or 10 kingdoms, or 10 governments, which shall arise from this kingdom. Here, God is telling the interpretation of the horns. The four creatures are four kingdoms, and then the 10 horns are kingdoms that will arise out of the fourth one. Notice the 10 horns arise from the Roman Empire. It was greater. And the Roman Empire was greater than stronger than all kingdoms before. And as Daniel recorded, it was dreadful and terrible. It had the speed of a leopard and the ferocity of a leopard. It had the strength of a bear, and it was combined in it. And it had the power of the mouth of a lion, its strongest asset. The Roman Empire existed from 36 B.C. to 476 A.D. That's important, as we'll show you in a moment. Okay? Now, let's go to the book we're actually covering, Revelation 13. Revelation chapter 13. Now, let's begin in verse 1 once again, and then go through verses 1 and 2. Then I stood in the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast, a single beast, rising out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his head a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard, his feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. Okay, so he says, I stood in the sand of the sea, as we've seen from Revelation 17:15, and also from Daniel 7. This has to do with the peoples, the various groups of peoples that were living in the area of these four kingdoms. The four kingdoms were all centered around the same spot, and they all developed within the same general area. Some were bigger, some were smaller, but they were all around the same general area. And I saw the beast rising out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his horn 10 crowns. The seven heads are the combination of the kingdoms that came before. The Babylonian was one head. The Medo-Persian was also one head. The Greco-Macedonian, remember, had four heads. It was actually it was four hits, and the Roman had one. The total is seven, and that's the seven hits. This is the empire that rose from 31 AD to 476. It's the description of the fourth beast that came up with seven heads. It had the combination of all that went before. It was bigger than the others and stronger than the others, included all that area. And the ten horns are ten kingdoms that shall arise from this kingdom, it said in Daniel 7:24. It arises from this kingdom. As I said, the beast described here is the Roman Empire, which existed from 31 BC to 476. And after it falls, the ten horns are ten kings, which shall arise from this kingdom, Daniel 7:24. We will see these come successively, one after the other. These ten kingdoms will arise between 476, when the Roman Empire was considered dead. It didn't stay dead, but it was considered dead, until the final one will appear, before Jesus Christ returns to the earth. There were ten kings that would go between those two, and when he comes to step in. And the last kingdom is the one Jesus Christ will be as the stone cut out without hands, will smash on the feet and destroy forever, as we saw in Daniel 2:44 and verse 45. So we see we're talking about the Roman Empire, the fourth big kingdom that came up. Daniel saw four, John only saw one. It was in his lifetime. And it says the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. In chapter 12, we were introduced to who the dragon is. Chapter 12 and verse 2, then being with child, she cried out in labor and in pain to give birth, and another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon having seven heads and ten horns, and seven diadems on his head. He was the author of this whole system. His tail drew a third part of the stars. Then we saw in verse 9, so the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan. God calls things what they are. Devil means slanderer. He slanders. There's so much slander going on today. It's really, people are even talking about how there's an angry mood. There's an angry mood in society. It's getting more and more angry, and when we get angry, we slander. Terrible things are said. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and the angels were cast out with him. He was thrown out. Look at verse 13. Now when the dragon saw that he'd been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the child. When he's got troubles, he goes after the woman. He goes after the church. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into her place, into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time, time and a half a time from the face of the serpent. We covered that last time. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. Again, we covered that last time. And the dragon was enraged with the woman and went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Christ. The dragon here is, he says it was the dragon who gave him great his power, his throne, and his authority. Remember Jesus, when he was tempted by Satan, says, I'll give you all these kingdoms, you just bow down to me. Jesus wasn't willing to do it, but this guy was. Gave him all the kingdoms. He gave him his power, his throne, and his authority. All came from Satan. We know this. We need to know this. The world will think the beast is serving God. It'll be convinced it's serving God. And the next beast in this chapter will strongly and deceptively support this view. We'll get to that when we get to that. The Church of God needs to know who is serving God and who isn't, because our eternal life may depend on it, on understanding the difference between the two. Now, verse 3, Revelation 13 and verse 3. And I saw one of his heads, and if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. The mortal wound, we understand, occurred in 476 AD. That's when historians tell us the original Roman Empire ended. But in 554, Justinian from Constantinople established what is known as the Imperial Restoration of the Empire. It's one of those horns that came up that would come from that empire. When the empire was gone, mortally wounded, a horn came up from it. And it was that one. And that those various revivals of that dominated the known world for over 1,000 years. And many of those 1,000 years were collectively known as the Dark Ages. When they're in charge, progress was unimpressive. Things did not develop. Knowledge didn't go. Freedom wasn't there. We hear a lot about freedom today. I hope we appreciate it because the world has had very little of it in its history. And although we have troubles and we have shortcomings, I hope we appreciate the freedoms we have here, especially in the United States, but not only here, but especially here. We've lived in other countries and they do not enjoy the same freedoms. And we need to be very grateful for the ones we do. But it's dominated the world for 1,000 years, for over 1,000 years. Verse 3, and I saw one of its heads, as if it had been mortally wounded, and I've already covered that, and its deadly wound was healed, and the world marveled and followed the beast. It did give it support. The whole world cooperated behind this horn. So they worshipped the dragon, which gave authority to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like the beast, and who is able to make war with him? So they worshipped the dragon. People today ignorantly often worship the dragon without even knowing it. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. You know, there are many people in the world who conclude that religion has so much troubles, so many wars, so much squabbling, that religion's the problem. And, you know, when you can almost be sympathetic to their viewpoint because it's amazing how much religion does have a problem. False religion does lead to war, which we saw with the four horsemen of the apocalypse. First one's false religion. The second one's war. They follow right behind each other. And that's what our earth has had so much of. And it's not religion that's the problem. It's false religion that's the problem. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 3, Paul's talking about he was sent to preach the gospel. But he says, but even if our gospel is veiled, he would find when he preached it, there was something over people's faces that they couldn't understand it. Even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing. That doesn't mean they're going to be permanently lost, but they're on the wrong road. Whose minds the God of this age has blinded. The God of this age has blinded people's minds. I don't know if you can remember when you didn't know certain things of the Bible. And it sounded so strange to hear things that today are commonplace, like we can be born as God's family and we can become children of God. And the whole purpose of God and the whole plan, it's blinded. When I first heard it, I thought, well, that's blasphemy. That's going way over the line. I thought that was out of line. And found out that's what it says. Whose minds the God of this age has blinded. And we've talked a little bit about this. I need to finish that up. How he uses things to blind people's minds. And it's amazing. You know, when somebody's blinded and you tell them they're wrong, their reaction is, wow. Not to calmly, quietly look at it, but it's an emotional reaction. Whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, that the glory of Christ could actually dwell in people. And the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them, should actually dawn on them. And he goes on to talk about we don't preach ourselves. The God of this world, Satan is the God of this world, and without knowing it, not deliberately, not willingly. When you're blinded, you don't know. When you're deceived, you don't know you're deceived. We've all had experiences of finding out we were wrong, something we were sure was wrong. I was sure it was that way, you know. Well, it wasn't. And that happens a lot. Well, it's going to happen big time for this world when the whole thing is made plain. And it's made very plain. If you look at Colossians chapter 2, the book of Colossians. Let's see, I left the scripture out of here. Thought I'd put it in. Colossians chapter 2. Now Colossians is talking about the Colossians were being disturbed by people who are bringing other teachings. and without going into the whole book, they were being led astray. And so Paul writes to them in Colossians 2, verse 18. He said, "Let no one cheat you of your reward, taking delight in false humility." There's proper humility and there's false humility. So much in this world, they try to humiliate people. They think it's a good thing. That's not what God does. God doesn't humiliate. We humiliate ourselves, but it's not how he works. "Let no one cheat you of your reward, taking delight in false humility and worshiping of angels." People are worshiping angels without knowing it. "Intruding into those things which he has not seen, vainly puffed up in his fleshly mind." Just a fleshly mind without the inspired mind of God or the inspired teaching of God. Just a human on his own reasoning, getting into trouble. "And not holding fast to the head, from whom all the body, nourished and knit together by joints and ligaments, grows with the increase that comes from God." We have to grow, but the increase has got to be from God. God's teaching, God's ways, God's mind. That's very important. And also in 1 Timothy, I won't turn there, 1 Timothy, the first five verses of chapter 4, 1 Timothy 4, 1 to 5, Paul warns Timothy about doctrines of demons. They're doctrines of demons. And Timothy's going into a church area that had some problems, and they may be succumbed to doctrines that come from demons. That's the origin of the immortal soul. The demons have that. And going to heaven. It's the demons that wanted to go to heaven. And various other things. That's not what's mentioned in 1 Timothy. But there are many things that have deceived the world. And let's go to Second Thessalonians. Well, I'll put that in later. Sorry, I'll pick that up later. But the people are ignorantly worshiping Satan without even knowing it, without being aware of it. And they're blinded. And when they're blinded, we have to have mercy because they don't know. They haven't been taught. And but it doesn't mean that they still operate on those thinkings. Revelation 13, verse 4. "So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast." They were worshiping the dragon. Satan loves to be worshiped. That's what he wanted all the time. He wanted to be esteemed by those on earth. And the fact that God was over him, he didn't like. So he wanted to be God, replace him, so that he could be esteemed. Then let's go on to, and he says, "And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast, and who was able to make war with him? They also worshiped the beast." In the Roman Empire, the Caesar was worshiped as God. Most of us don't know that, that he was a manifestation of God. Robinson's Medieval and Modern Times, although that's an older book, an older college textbook, says on page 7, "The worship of the emperor. In a word, the Roman government was not only wonderfully organized, everyone was required to join in the worship of the emperor because he stood for the majesty and glory of the dominion. All were obliged, as good citizens, to join in the official sacrifices to the head of the state as God." That was part of what it was. And you'll read certain indications of that throughout the New Testament about who is the most preeminent. And there, when we visited the King Tut exhibit in Fort Lauderdale, one of the things they explained was the pharaoh was also worshipped as God, the sun god. And when they explained the meaning of his name as in the hieroglyphs, and they explained what it was, one explanation they gave toward the end of the tour was that he was the image of the living God. So I decided not to buy anything with his name on it. this particular God died at age 19. He began to reign at age 9, and it lasted for 10 years, and he died. They think that he hurt himself, broke his leg. They've done all kinds of stuff with modern science. It looks like he broke his leg above the knee, and it got infected. And the infection killed him about 2 days, they think. That's the most up-to-date thinking on it. So this God didn't last too long. There are certain prophecies about that I'll tell you about. Now let's go to 2 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians. I know this is a lot of detail here. I hope it's not too much detail. 2 Thessalonians, we'll look at the first six verses. 2 Thessalonians 1 to 6. Writing to the Thessalonian church, he says, "Now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 1. Now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. Apparently there were people writing false letters in Paul's name. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first. We've wondered about that for a long time, we think we see certain things of it. Don't know whether we've seen all of it. I kind of doubt it, but time will tell. Unless the falling away comes first, and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or is worshipped. He thinks he's higher than God. Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God in the temple of God, he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. He's claiming to be God. And he's asking for troubles big time. And the people conclude in Revelation 13, saying, who is like the beast? And who is able to make war with him? Who is like the beast? And who is able to make war with him? David Stern, who produced the Jewish New Testament and the Jewish New Testament commentary, he's got the whole Bible as well, on this verse has a very interesting comment. He said, who is like the beast? This beast worship litany is a parody of the name of the angel Michael. Hebrew meaning, who is like God? They say, who is like the beast? Michael's name means, who is like God? Michael, who defeated the dragon, chapter 12, apparently he's not a very good loser, and the war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels. So Stern continues, who defeated the dragon and the song of Moses. If you'll look at Revelation 15, skipping ahead a little bit, in verse 3, Revelation 15, and they sang the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, great and marvelous are your works, O Lord God. Just and true are your ways, O King of the saints. Who shall not fear you and glorify your name? For you alone are holy, for all nations shall come and worship you. Your judgments have been manifest. That comes from a section in Exodus chapter 15. Let's go back. I should have gone to Exodus 15 first. Slipped up. Exodus chapter 15. It's in my notes first, but that doesn't mean it gets mentioned first, sadly. Exodus 15 and verse 11. Here's the song of Moses, where he says in verse 11, Exodus 15, 11, who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders? And he goes on to expand that, and then it's mentioned, the song of Moses is mentioned in Revelation 15. So here's a takeoff. Who is like the beast? In other words, that's the most impressive being in the whole universe. And who is able to make war with him? It appears to the people here that it was impossible, and during the times of the Roman Empire, it was impossible to move against them. They had power, and they used it. They weren't afraid to use it. They, Pax Romana, kind of because they were not afraid to use their power, often in trampling and stamping, but they still used it very powerfully. And who is able to make war with them? It seemed that nobody could take on the Roman Empire. That's what's being described here, remember? This Roman Empire from 31 to 476. There was no speaking against it or working against it. Revelation 13 and verse 5. Revelation 13 and verse 5. And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies. And he was given authority to continue for 42 months. From Mr. Armstrong's booklet, Who or What is the Prophetic Beast? There's a subhead called The Deadly Wound Healed. It was the fourth kingdom, symbolized by the fourth horn. That's the horns now that came out of the Roman Empire. It was the fourth kingdom, symbolized by the fourth horn, succeeding the fall of the Roman Empire in 476, which really healed the deadly wound and restored the empire. In AD 554, Justinian, emperor of the East from Constantinople, set up his government through the imperial legate at Ravenna, Italy, and brought about what is known today as the imperial restoration of the empire. Now notice verse 5 of Revelation 13. Power was given to the beast, once healed, to continue 42 months. In the prophecies pertaining to the times of Israel's punishment, each day represents a year in the actual fulfillment. Exodus 4, 4 to 6, Numbers 14, 34. You probably know those verses, but I won't turn there. Exodus 4, 4 to 6, and Numbers 14, 34. That's a day for prophecy. A year equals a day. Thus, the healed beast is to continue 1260 years. That's 42 months. Following the healing in 554 came the Frankish kingdom, French, the Holy Roman Empire, German, then Austrian Habsburg, Napoleon's kingdom, French. But when Napoleon was crushed in 1814, the healed beast continued no longer. So closed, this is a quote now from West's Modern History, page 337, so closed the government that dated from Augustus Caesar from 31 BC. It went into the abyss, as we will see. From 554 to 1814, the duration of that healed beast was exactly 1260 years. That's how we get to the 1260 years. Ending with Napoleon, where it went down, and it's going to come back up again, though. But it's exactly 1260 years. Well, we'll pick up Revelation 13 next time.